What if digital communication, emailing a friend or following a Twitter feed, felt as real as being touched? That's the question that led Michael Korist to explore new ideas being triggered by laboratory research around the world. The result is a book called Worldwide Mind: The Coming Integration of Humanity, Machines, and the Internet. Korist has a natural interest in the subject because he has two computers in his head, cochlear implants that let him hear. He tells Steve Paulson that his implants make him a living example of the integration of humans and computers.
Once you get a cochlear implant, there is no going back, because first, you have to be essentially totally deaf to get a cochlear implant, but also the process of getting the implant precludes the ear's own biological methods of hearing. So once you get the device, that's it, and you will always hear electronically in the future. So I'm certainly irreversibly computational. But it also got me thinking about what more can be done with this technology. So for me, it was a proof of principle that you can, in fact, install a computer inside the body and use that to feed information to the nervous system. So the question I started asking was, can you go further? Can you do something equivalent to give sensory information, perceptual information, directly to the brain itself?
Now, you have used the phrase worldwide mind. In fact, that's the title of your book. Can you spell that out, what you mean by that idea?
Well, think of the analogy between an individual ant and an ant colony. So an ant colony does very intelligent things. It finds food, it goes to war with other ant colonies, it builds these huge, elaborate systems of chambers. Ants will even do farming. They will use aphids as food sources. They do remarkable things. But no individual ant has a mind of its own. It is the collective property of the anthill that actually emerges out of the collective interactions of all of the different ants. So I asked the question, could you do the same thing with human beings? Could our collective activity give rise to a consciousness or a sense of volition that thinks on its own terms rather than being controlled by any particular human being? So that's the worldwide mind concept that I grapple with in the book.
Mm-hmm. What other people have described as a hive mind, there's not so much the individual consciousness, but it's more like this collective consciousness, right?
That's exactly right. So I'm exploring this idea. Is it meaningful to talk about human beings creating a collective consciousness?
Are you talking about this in terms of the internet, that somehow our individual brains would be plugged into the internet?
Well, I think the internet is certainly a precursor of that happening. And we do have collective behavior arising on the internet now. And the example I use in the book is of Google. So Google does not maintain a gigantic index of all the web pages in the world and then look up that index. It does something very different. What it does is it records all the choices people make to link to particular pages on the theory that if a lot of people link to a particular page, that page is important. That page has some piece of information that humanity values. So Google really aggregates the sum total of many millions, even billions of collective decisions about what is meaningful. And that's how it does a search for you.
Well, it would seem that there would be a big difference between having this kind of technology, you know, our access to the internet external to our bodies. You know, we can type what we want into our computer keyboards. But then once you put it inside our heads, that would seem to be a whole different business.
It is a whole different business. The question I raise is, one thing the internet lacks now is the ability to give you information about what other people are feeling. Even more, it lacks the ability to tell you what other groups are feeling. So I got a hint of that when I was following Twitter. So in Twitter, when I was watching the revolutions in Libya, in Egypt, in Tunisia, I was getting this remarkable feeling that I was sensing the excitement and the fear and the anger and the thrill of what was going on in those countries by looking at the aggregate tweets that were coming from those countries. That led me to imagine, well, what if it was a part of our bodies? What if we can get electronic information that we would perceive emotionally and perceptually instead of just reading text on a screen or watching videos? In my book, I argued that that is now at least conceptually possible. So this would allow us to be aware of each other's personas and personalities and perceptions in a way which is really not possible today. Although, let me say, it is possible today in groups. You know, when you're in a group, you can feel that group is happy or excited or sad or angry or whatever. But we don't have that ability on the internet. And so there is this kind of distancing that goes on when you're not really aware of other people's feelings.
This is what you call telepathy, is that right?
Exactly, telepathy. Or more precisely, collective telepathy, where you have very, very large groups of people collectively responding emotionally to events.
So how would that work? I mean, how could we somehow tap into the emotions of someone else just with this technology that's been somehow wired into our brains?
Okay. So in theory, when you're feeling an emotion that is connected with a particular kind of neural activation in your brain. So we know the brain's not just a goo of liquefied jello. You know, it responds in very specific ways. For example, when you're angry, your amygdala gets very activated. So one of the things the amygdala does is it modulates fear, anger, the fight or flight reaction. So when somebody's amygdala is being activated when it's busy, then you know that person is feeling some strong and often negative emotion. If you saw that kind of amygdala activation in thousands of people simultaneously in a country like Tunisia, you know immediately and viscerally that something is going on in that country.
I still don't understand how there would be some trigger in our own brains that would alert us to how all these other people are feeling.
Sure. So you would have this equivalent technology in your own brain. So you would have some kind of technology that would know how to activate particular sets of neural circuitry in your brain to make you feel an analog of what these other people are feeling. So if you chose to be plugged into, say, Tunisia, then you yourself would begin to feel some feeling of anger or upset. And by putting that together with other pieces of information, like geographic information, you would just know immediately and wordlessly that there was some kind of deep anger going on in a distant country.
Well, it would seem that the larger question in all of this, and I have no doubt that this technology is coming. I mean, whether it plays out exactly as you have speculated, I mean, who knows? But it would seem that the great risk is that we would lose our individuality. You know, we would get more and more plugged into this giant connectivity, you know, maybe some sort of group mind, hive mind, and would we lose our sense of self in the process?
We may have to rethink what it means to be an individual. The benefits of being plugged in are also considerable. I compare it to a violinist in a symphony. So that person might seem like they're completely subordinated to the total orchestra, but really they are achieving their own individuality all the more strongly by bringing out their fullest talent. So it may be that in that process of being so profoundly connected with other people, we achieve new heights of self-awareness and mastery of our environment that we really couldn't have any other way.
One final question. Are you optimistic about this future? Are you excited by it?
I am optimistic. It's funny because so many people are reflexively pessimistic. They imagine a future like the Borg in Star Trek, where you have this race of lobotomized drones who just follow the orders of the collective. And I think that we too easily feel that fear because we are presented with no alternatives. We just get these nightmare scenarios like Star Trek. But I try to depict a positive future where people do have this incredibly emotionally intimate technology built into their own bodies. But because they've also been taught in a wiser society how to use that technology, they don't fall prey to the easy, quick fixes of just opening that next message, that they attain the emotional maturity to know who they are, to communicate deeply with other people, to choose to turn off the technology. And I think we have to think about that because we have these problems now. We don't have to wait for an implanted technology to make these problems for us. We have these problems right now. So in the book, I really portray this kind of implanted technology as an extreme version that we now have. And when you push it to that extreme, I ask, well, what could you do? How would you counterbalance that incredibly addictive power? And I think the only answer is to teach people how to look at each other.
Michael Korist is the author of Worldwide Mind, The Coming Integration of Humanity, Machines, and the Internet. He spoke with Steve Paulson.